different materials, water, coolant, fuel, whatever. And in general, in the industry, it's a very important part. And I will not give you any equations how to calculate and design and so on. Just to try to give you an overview what types of pumps do we use and why, for which purpose, which solution could be the best, and where we have to take care some special behavior of these devices, how to work with them. The pump will transmit energy to what? So you have a pump. In order to drive it, you need a motor or engine or whatever. So the energy will be transmitted in the end to what?
Pressure.
The medium which you are pumping will get it. Of course, there will be always losses. But the energy level of that medium will be increased. The pressure, the speed, the height, or whatever, in any form. So, the beginning, again, the third time already. It's the very basic, and you have not only to understand it, you have to feel it. So the Bernoulli equation, we will use it again. On one side, the old story, the smaller the cross section, the higher the speed, the higher the kinetic energy, and with that, the higher the so-called dynamic pressure, this component, and the lower is the static pressure, because only the static pressure can be converted in kinetic energy. So energy conservation is still valid. Then flow separation, if you have two steep angles, on the side where the flow becomes narrower, you will have never issues with separation, because it's forced by the wall. But to follow the wall, it happens normally up to 7 degrees. Above 7 degrees, you might have flow separation depending on viscosity, temperature, and so on. This is always risky, so you need smooth bends. And maximum 7 degrees is the usual situation. Once again, laminar flow and turbulent flow. So laminar flow, you should imagine it like sheets of paper lying one on the other, and you can slide it. They are not mixing. Turbulent flow, the flow lines are crossing each other. You have speed components perpendicular to the walls. And it's very good, for example, for heat transfer, and it's very poor for heat transfer. But even in a turbulent flow, you will have this situation in a very thin so-called boundary layer. The boundary layer behaves laminar. Okay? This was the trick I mentioned with the shark skin. It is grown in a way that it can release this boundary layer and reduce the skin friction of the body of the shark. So that was the first experiments. People wanted to understand sharks, how they work. And it's very interesting. They need always a little speed to pump water through their, what's the name? To carry oxygen to the blood of the shark.
Not lungs,
yes.
Gills.
Okay, so it works only with dynamic pressure. So more developed fishes have their pumps already. They are pumping the water even in standstill. They can breathe. But shark needs always speed. So it's very dangerous for shark to be trapped in a net of fishermen, because they are fighting to get free, and they have no speed. So they will be normally suffocated if they cannot swim. Even if they are sleeping, they need an idle speed. So So they cannot sleep in standstill, they are always moving. And people found out that they calculated the body, the shape, the cross-section and everything, and they had less drag than a man-made body with the same form. So they've made some scientific research, and then it turned out that the skin has this very special structure, reducing or completely removing, releasing the boundary layer from their bodies. And we are using this now for sportsmen, for swimming suits. Same structure. Okay, if you are looking, let's say a cylinder, if the flow is turbulent, you have always flow separation and vortex is behind. And now the question, a golf ball has some little, not holes, but what, Ridney? Yep. In order to fly better than a polished one. What could be the reason for it? I'm looking for a chart. Might be. So then the question. We learned at school that the best shape, best aerodynamic shape is something like this, yes? And this shape is not better in drag. But the shape looks very nice and it's not better. Why? Because we are gaining some drag due to the form, but losing a lot of the drag due to skin friction, the surface. So we can save this surface and use this rounded shape, and in total it will be best. So now, if the backside is similar, we will have a few degrees, it's coming with us, the flow, and then it separates and we have the vortexes. And it's very, very funny, and it has to do with laminar and turbulent, with this small, what was the name?
Dimples.
So the flow will separate only later, and you have a narrower cross-section with the vortexes. It has a better virtual form at the end. So the skin friction is not improving with those dimples. Absolutely not. But the form, the virtual form, will be improved. Okay? So in so I've got many often the question, if we would do these dimples in the intake port of a car, if it improves in terms of power. Absolutely not. Those dimples will increase the skin friction. And they can just cause to make the separation cross-section smaller. So the flow is more stable on the surface with these dimples, follows better the form. And not that huge back area is suffering due to flow separation. Okay. So, if we want to push liquid through a tube or pipe, you will find out if we are increasing the volume flow, we have to exponentially increase the pressure. So it's let's say the resistance of the pipe, and typically the most of the pumps are doing the opposite. If it's delivering little amount of medium, it gives us a high pressure, and with increasing flow the pressure will drop. It was typically the turbocharger did the same, all the lines of identical speed look like this. There will be some other examples, but basically, so if you put the both together, there will be typically a crossing point. So you have a certain pressure with the pump, and it will have a stable point of operation in a system. So, if we look this pipe curve, if we deliver the, it is the liquid flow and it is the delivery height, if we want to increase the flow, we need more and more pressure. But if, for example, the flow is coming from the second floor to the first floor, you don't need the pump at the beginning. At zero flow, you have already a positive pressure difference. And if you add the pump, the flow will be increased. And at a certain flow level, you have zero pressure difference at the end. You are eating up this existing hydrostatic pressure, hydrostatic due to the height. And if we want to increase the flow beyond, you need a positive pump energy. So, so it's the same. Let's say in Pannonhalma, there's a famous abbey, and they are making wine. And it's very, very sensitive wine to let pump it, let's say, with a piston pump, with piston rings and ceilings, and you know, it might be weird particulates and so on. Some materials, they are not compatible with the wine. So I typically try to do it in a way that the first step of the process is on the hill, and the cellar is built in a way that the next process step is the next floor downward. So the wine can move always from fifth floor to the fourth, to the third, and so on. And you do not need a pump, because they are moving in the range, they only have to open the tap, and it will pour down. They would need a pump if they require a higher flow, but they have time. Winemaking is not a fast business, so it works with that way. And now the question. What will be the flow characteristic of pipes if we are connecting them serial? So pipe C1 and C2, one is after the other in the same line. Of course, the resistance or the flow loss will be added. It's like the same in electrotechnic. If you are putting resistors in series, the resistance will be added. If you are connecting them in parallel, of course the reciprocals will be added, is absolutely the same like electrotechnic. So C1 and C2 together in parallel, we have less resistance, of course, because we have in total more cross section. Now the fluid machinery. In general, we have pumps and we have turbines. In case of pumps, we are delivering the energy and transmitting it to the fluid. In case of turbines, the fluid has the energy and we are converting it into mechanical, typically to rotational energy. What are the important parameters or functions? Manometric delivery height. Which delivery height is the maximum of the given pump? Just imagine we are firefighters and we have a fire on seventh floor. What's the estimated height of the seventh floor?
21 meters.
At least, yes, at least. So if we have a pump only with 18 meters delivery height, it will burn. So we need a better one. Flow rate, what is the maximum flow? Say we are working in the city of Dürr and we have to supply the water to, let's say, 130,000 people, or I do not know, 400,000 flats. And we need a good estimate which pumping capacity is necessary to supply all them with water. The power, okay, I have chosen a pump with a height, with the flow rate, and now I need the power of the motor which propels the whole system. Of course, and the power of the motor will be significantly more than the power we are transmitting into the fluid because of the limited efficiency. So the efficiency of the pump is important. And now the question, the maximum suction height. If I have a well with water in, let's say, 20 meters from the surface, can I put a pump on the earth and to suck the water with the pump? Will it work? What is the maximum theoretical height I can suck the water from a hole, from a well? 20? Okay, let's say, how high is the tensile strength of water if you pull it? Can you pull water? Zero. Okay, so sucking the water is somehow strange. So you cannot pull it. It looks like, but it is not pulling. Something else will deliver the water to the surface. Which pressure? Vacuum doesn't exist. The absolute pressure can go to zero and that's it. It's the lowest pressure you can achieve.
Dynamic pressure?
If I have time, I do not need any speed. I just want to have this dumped water on the surface. I'm thirsty. The question, what is the maximum height it could work?
Between two pumps in this way, so I don't know, we have a 20 meter well, and...
But could you calculate the maximum height? You can do it in one stage. What pumps the water finally from the well? You are reducing the pressure with the pump on Earth level, yes, you are reducing the pressure. It's not vacuum, you have some depression. The pressure became lower than the atmospheric pressure. Which force pushes the water to the pump? So you have a water surface, you have a tube, and in this point, you are reducing the pressure now. And the water starts to rise, it will come up. Why? Which pressure do we have on the surface? The ambient air pressure. Liquids and gases has no tensile strength. You cannot pull them. You can only push them. You have to look always after the force or pressure which pushes. So you have 1 bar atmospheric pressure, more or less. Okay. 101, more or less, 1 bar. So what is the maximum height, suction height of a pump, theoretically? So the density of water is pretty simple.
10 meters. It's around 10
meters. Nearly 10 meters, yes. Will it work? So for 10 meters, I have to reduce the pressure to zero, almost zero. If I apply zero pressure, what happens to the water? What happens to water 20 C at zero absolute pressure? Significantly.
It will
boil. Will boil. this is not more water. So there is a very, very strong limitation of maximum suction height. So normal pumps, because of the volume flow, pressure loss, and cavitation, I will explain it later. So if the water starts to boil, it will form some steam bubbles. And a little later in the pump, they will collapse. And this collapsing will cause serious damage in the mechanic. So 6-7 meters are normally the maximum. And if we have to go deeper in the well, we have to put the pump into the well. Okay? And we can push the water high, but we cannot suck it. Okay? That's very important. It's clear? Okay. It's really basics. Really basics, but... Okay. So it's the typical situation. The ambient pressure will force the water if we are reducing the pressure with the pump. Okay. It's the usual arrangement, the e-motor or a combustion engine and the centrifugal water pump. So the first pump in history, Archimedes used this his crew. And it's very funny because if you stop it, all the water will pour down. But if you turn it with the friction, and the friction will help in this case, some amount of the water will stick in the system and will come high if you rotate it. This device is interesting. It's a wheel with buckets. So the river moves the wheel, and on this side, the full buckets will come up, and the content will be poured into this funnel or duct, and the empty buckets go down on the other side. So is it a pump or is it a turbine? That point is a turbine. The water propels the system. And the upper part is a pump. It is delivering water from a lower height to a higher one. It's a unified system, two in one. Very easy, very cheap, but it's absolutely functional. And later on, the Industrial Revolution, the steam engine was invented and used. And it's funny, they were fired by coal. And the most of them were used in order to pump out the water from the coal mines. That's the very beginning. Even James Watt, his first steam engine was used in a coal mine to pump out the water that the people can work down below the Earth's surface. So fluid machinery in general. So the turbines or driving machines are water turbines, water wheels, volumetric hydraulic cylinders or hydraulic motors. We might see examples for all of them. We have the pumps. And the pumps can be dynamic pumps, like the turbocharger is a typical dynamic pump. We have no volumetric effect, just putting the air in a centrifugal force field. And the centrifugal force will increase the pressure. We have pump with positive displacement, piston, membrane, or whatever, or gear pumps. And jet pumps, they are just using the Bernoulli equation. Okay, the typical industrial water pump. You can see there is a shaft. You will connect the driving motor to this shaft, two bearings, and you have the wheel and the housing. Where is the entry? This or that one? This is the entry, of course. It's a centrifugal pump. So the water comes in, and the centrifugal force will give more pressure, and it comes out in this spiral housing and leaves the pump at this flange. So, positive displacement pumps, for example, is a typical air compressor of a truck. The two cylinder in line, you have a crankshaft, conrods, pistons, inlet and outlet valves, it compresses air and pumps it into a air bottle. Or a V2. This one is not more widely used, but let's say 10, 15 years ago, most of the passenger cars had such a pump. Have you seen such a device ever? It was used in power steering. It was a hydraulic pump. It was used in power steering, but not the electric one like today. Larger trucks have still today hydraulic power steering is still in use, but in passenger cars not more. And this one is very funny. This plate rotates, and the other part rotates as well. But this plate is angled, not parallel to the housing, so it will one time push the plunger into this barrel in per rotation. Do you have an idea? I guess all of you have such a pump in his home, typically. Where could it be? And we are using this pump for a similar purpose in cars. Today, new energy, yes? It means?
That kind of pump what helps to circulate the water to push below 20 meters and pump it up.
Earth heat usage or geothermal? Okay, not necessarily geothermal. This one is the typical pump of a fridge or air conditioning unit. It's quiet because higher number of cylinders, small diameter plungers with a very, very narrow tolerance in the bore. So it's a typical pump for fridge, for air condition, for heat pump, for household heating and whatever. And typically the cars have such a barrel unit and there are several plungers in a circular shape in that housing. And this is the pump of the air conditioning unit in the cars. So positive displacement pump can be very different in their design. So the simplest one for us, engineers, is a piston type pump. It's typically, as I mentioned, air compressor for trucks. It's a regular aluminum piston with piston rings, oil circulation, so lube oil. It's very, very traditional. A diaphragm type pump is important in cases where you need absolute tightness of the system. So for example, earlier cars had a mechanical fuel pump to get the fuel from the fuel tank to the carburetor. And it was a diaphragm type pump, because if it's a piston type, you have always some leakage and your car is smelling all the time like open canister of fuel. It's very, very smelly, stinky. So you must be absolutely tight. Or pumps with rotating elements, with some radial, eccentric or concentric devices. Or you can use the space between two screws. You will see the examples very soon. So it's a piston pump. This one with some cam lobe, some multiple cam lobe. This is typically used in high pressure pump of direct injection systems. So five plungers is not usual in passenger cars. For diesel cars, two or three maximum. It's a typical arrangement. This one is the air condition or heat pump. So the plungers are moving in and out. This is the diaphragm type. So you have a sealed diaphragm and elastic membrane, and you are moving it with a push rod or electrically or whatever. You have check valves in and outlet, and it will deliver liquid. And there was a trick, for example. If you imagine in old cars, this is roughly 30 years ago, it was the nearly every car had this type of pump. Mechanical fuel pump providing 0.2 bar and the fuel went to the carburetor. And of course, after a certain service life, this membrane is a textile membrane with some gasoline-proof rubber-like sealing. It's a sealed, tight membrane. But due to the heat and due to the fuel and due to the time and motion, it starts to have some porosities. And fuel will cross it and come out. What's the issue? The issue that this device is linked to the engine. So the fuel will go into the engine, into the oil pan, will dilute the oil. And after a certain time with an untight membrane or diaphragm, you will have a ruined crankshaft or conrod bearing. It will kill the engine, the fuel. So what to do? Just a trick. People used twin membranes, one in contact with the fuel and a parallel one with the spacer. And both membranes were linked to the push rod and moved together. So the upper one delivered the pressure, fuel in and fuel out. And the lower one had no function for the most of the time. But in one of the spacers, there was a small tiny hole to the ambient. And since that diaphragm is loaded and that one is not loaded, the porosity will start always in the upper one. So some fuel droplets came out. And after a certain time, the fuel came out through this small hole. You stopped your car, wanted to go to shopping, and it was smelly. And it was the device to give the information to the driver, you have to replace the fuel pump diaphragm. A very clear indication, even sitting in the car, driving, you could smell it. So it was a clear indicator not to kill the engine with fuel, going all the time through the membrane into the oil. Okay, so tricks of good old times. So, what do you think? Well, where do we find the most of these pumps in cars? Typically, yes, it's a gear type pump. It's delivering, in this case, the oil in the grooves between the teeth. Where have you seen in this term a similar device?
Supercharger.
Exactly, the Roots type supercharger is the same. But in order to have more volume flow and less pressure rate, they have only two or three teeth. But it's a gear type pump. It's absolutely the same principle. And if you imagine, depending on back pressure, of course you have a backflow because the parts are not touching each other. There is no ceiling, only a very, very narrow gap due to tolerances. And if it stands still and you have a higher pressure, you will have a steady backflow. So the higher the rotational speed, the less is the effect of the backflow, but it's always existing. So at zero speed is the efficiency is zero because you have only leakage. As the speed increases, the leakage will reduce and the efficiency goes up. And at very high speeds, the inflow, there will be flow separation, vortexes and so on. These losses will increase again. So the efficiency is something like this. It's the best in the middle, and it's dropping on both sides. So you have at medium speeds, it's the best. And it's funny, because if you have a low viscosity oil, it will increase the leakage, the low speed losses, but it will decrease the high speed losses. Due to the low viscosity, you have less flow resistance. If you have a high viscosity oil, it will reduce the leakage, but it will increase the high speed losses. So in design, you have to take care of the viscosity, volume flow, and all these parameters, how to choose the right one. So in other types of oil pumps, let's say the most of the automotive companies will never buy patents. They are claiming a lot of patents. Every development will be protected with a patent, but they do not buy it from other companies. Only very, very few cases. So if one company invented this type of oil pump, the next one will invent this type. So, so with the patents, you are forcing the other guys to spend more time and money for the same purpose. It is the real function of patents in the industry. And this type of oil pump is typically fitted to the front end of the crankshaft in the cylinder block. It is very cheap, it was very popular, but of course these ones were typically driven with one shaft to the spark distributor, so half engine speed. Half engine speed is very good for the high viscosity oil. You can reduce the friction of the oil pump. And this one, due to the high crankshaft speed, was not so efficient, but very cheap in production. So in, let's say in the 80s, 90s, it was very popular and it went back again, because even the fuel consumption caused by the oil pump is in the meantime significant. We had to reduce it. Gear pump characteristics. At different speeds and different heights, the maximum volume flow, of course, increases. And you can see if the speed is low, the pressure will cause more leakage losses. So all the lines are different. So everything is moving, so everything changes. So the whole system is influenced by the speed of the gear pump, by the viscosity of the medium, and by the back pressure. Okay. So here you can see the effect of the viscosity, and here you can see the effect of speed. There's now the high speed part. So these are the flow losses at high speed. No, it's delta pressure, sorry. Yes. And the maximum speed depends on the viscosity. The lower the viscosity, the higher is the maximum speed of the same pump. This one, this one is the efficiency above speed. You see at zero speed, zero efficiency, because 100% leakage if you have some back pressure. It goes up, and if you continue, it will go down again due to the flow losses. This is a typical behavior of the gear type pumps. Mechanical efficiency is, of course, the mechanical friction doesn't matter, or the reaction of different temperatures, because the viscosity will change. And now the screw type pumps. So this is a typical industrial air compressor, the screw type pump. But it's always the same. People invented many, many different devices in order to, let's say, to have a workaround around the patent of the other company. So this led to many different design solutions. So the rotary vane pumps. So this one I mentioned, this type was always used in power steerings in hydraulic systems. And this one, this very simple one, is typically used on diesel engines for the vacuum of the brake servo unit. It's just providing some depression, the rubber hose connected to it, that's linked to the brake servo unit, and increases the or helps you to provide enough brake pressure in the system. So now you have seen it already. These are gear pumps, typically used for as a supercharger for gases and not for liquids in that shape. And the peristaltic pump, it works like our body. in certain terms. So we have rollers, and we are, let's say, working on a rubber hose. And the important story, we are not getting touch with the liquid inside, and the liquid will not get in touch with ambient air or whatever. So it's typically used in medical devices. So for example, this artificial kidney treatment, your blood will be bypassed and pumped through a let's say an electromechanical filtering device, but the pump is this type of pump. Or if you are, let's say, providing poisons for agriculture to kill insects, whatever, and the workers must be protected against the substance. It's the same story. So these pumps have absolutely no leakage, and they are very, very smooth and nice with the liquid itself. So blood, for example, with very, very, with cells and complicated molecules, it can be destroyed mechanically, and this type of pump will not destroy it. It's a very smooth operating pump. No. And let's say the most time we are using dynamic pumps, it's the same story again. We are building up a centrifugal force field and using it for pressure increase. So I will. Okay. Typically, for small volume flow and high pressure ratio, we are using the radial type of pump. And as the volume flow increases and the pressure difference decreases, the flow is getting semi-axial or fully. So let's say the propeller of a big vessel or ship is an axial type. Or if you have a power station on the Danube, little pressure, little height difference, huge volume flow, you will use those type of turbines. Maybe I have, yes. So it's, for example, a power station on a river like the Danube in Hungary. Or these two are typical turbines for power stations maybe in Colorado. So 100, 200 meters height difference, significant pressure difference. So you have these semi-axial turbine wheels. And if you remember, a passenger car turbocharger was always a centripetal turbine, it's a radial machine, and it used to be a centrifugal compressor, a radial one as well. If you look at the gas turbine of a large passenger jet engine, the compressor and the turbine both are axial, because in the difference in volume flow. It just depends on power and sizing. So the huge one requires far more flow, and you can handle it only with an axial system. But just look how many compressor stages a jet engine has. 6, 7, 8, 9. Because the axial compressor will do only a little pressure ratio, and you have to multiply them one after the other to have a really good compression ratio. Radial one can give on its own pressure ratios above 4, one stage. With two stages, you are already roughly at 10. And the axial compressors of passenger aircraft will give 1.2 or something like this pressure ratio. So you need one after the other to come to a reasonable compression ratio. So, okay, I am looking for the most important story of the day. Yes, we can calculate the delivery height or the pressure rise, pressure ratio of such a centrifugal pump. And it's interesting, Mr. Euler came to the idea to compare the vectors of the function. So the wheel is rotating, the blades are bent back, in this case, and there will be a tangential speed of the blade, this U1. There is then absolute velocity of the rotor coming into the wheel, it has no radial component at the beginning because the pump is coming after this point. So it's just coming straight. And the resulting vector related to the blade is this W1. And now you see that the engineer designed the pump in a very reasonable way, because the W1 is parallel to the entry segment of the blade. So the curvature, the bending of the blade, must be in a way that you avoid collision at the entry. Of course, each volume flow and will fit only one speed. The volume flow is the V1, the speed of the pump is the U1, so it must fit, must be in a certain ratio. You understand? So to avoid collision at the entry. So on the exit side, you will see a higher U2, tangential speed, of course, we have higher diameter, the same rotational speed, but more diameter. We can guess, or we know, that the water can only come in parallel with the blade, because it's guided by the blades. So with the two vectors, we can define the absolute vector, this V2, which one is the absolute speed of the water leaving the pump. Now the question, how can I calculate or define the pressure gain? And I will look for a better picture, maybe. Yes, this is a good one. So, and this is a very, very frequent test question at the end of the term, because you will see in real life, pump with so-called straight blades, the exit is perpendicular. It's absolutely radial, the exit part of the blade. This one is backward. Oh, sorry for my translation. The backward bent blade, and is a forward bent blade. And the behavior is totally different in all cases. Because, and now I can explain it, we have the tangential speed of the exit point. We have the absolute speed, and we have the speed related to the blade. So we know the water is coming with this W1 parallel to the blade. We have this amount of tangential speed of the wheel. So the resulting absolute speed of the water is C1. If we now project C1 to this tangential speed or tangential vector, this vector will give us the pressure gain related to the entry situation. But we knew in the entry situation, this component was zero. Going back, you know, the projection of V1 to U1 is zero, because they are perpendicular. If you have a device to give the water some tangential speed, it will be a given vector. In this case, it's zero. So all the gain in tangential direction is related directly proportional to the pressure gain of the pump. So what happens if we are increasing the flow through the same system? So we have the same rotational speed, this U2. We are doubling the flow. So the new resulting vector C2 is very steep, and the projection of it is very short. So what happens if we are increasing the flow rate? The pressure will drop. This is the behavior we guess from a pump. More volume flow, less pressure ratio. It's a very typical behavior. So now, from the other side, just imagine you built an engine. You have such a water pump. The car is old, let's say historical car before World War II. You are using the car for years, and you have more and more limescale in the system. So the resistance will increase. So originally, your engine worked maybe in this point. You have now limescale, the flow will go back, but the pressure ratio is going up. So the pump is fighting against this resistance. So So can save the system for a pretty long time, which automatically, due to the reduced volume flow, it will give more pressure. It's a very stable system. But the flow is limited. If we are using a fully radial pump exit, it is absolutely not sensitive. You can increase this W1, and the C1 will be steeper, but the end of C1 is always in the same position, so the projection of C1 to the tangential line is always the same. So the delivery height will not change. Okay, of course, friction is not considered and efficiency, but the theoretical delivery height is stable. So this pump will not react independently from the delivery height or resistance. It will push the same amount of water. And now we have a forward curved blade. Have you seen such a pump or fan or something like this? It's typical in ventilation units, in civil engineering, air condition, ventilation of large buildings, this type of air pumps. And you will see why. Because what happens? If we are increasing the mass flow, just look, we are increasing, doubling the volume flow from W1 to W2. It will elongate C2, and the projection onto the tangential line is longer. So increased flow will increase pressure ratio. It sounds fantastic, yes? It's like perpetuum mobile. So we are typically using it for systems where we have to move huge volume flows against a low brake pressure. Because just imagine, in this system, let's say it's the air conditioning unit, and you have an air cleaner, a filter. And the filter will be clogged. What happens? More resistance will reduce the mass flow, and the reduced mass flow will lead to an even less pressure ratio of the pump, so it collapses. So it cannot survive increase of resistance. You must be in a calculated space, and if the resistance of the system is increasing by dirty air filters or whatever, it will collapse. This is not stable in that term. So it is very efficient and very powerful if everything as you designed, and it can be very, very early instable due to increased resistance in the system. I typically would not use it in a cooling system where I have to calculate with deposits, lime scale and with those effects, because it will collapse the flow. Okay. Centrifugal pump characteristics. Shock curve. Constant pump speed. We are reducing the volume flow, and the delivery height goes up, so the pressure goes up. It's the normal behavior. If you remember, which type of pump could it be? The blades are curved forward, backward, or straight. If you experience this behavior, it's the backward curved, of course. The most frequently used water pump, anyhow, is backward curved. The power curve at a given speed, depending on flow rate, the required driving power, for example, of the e-motor driving the pump. It's the efficiency, the same story. It has always an optimum, and if the pump is slower, you have the leakage losses. If the pump is faster, you have the flow losses, typically. It's even in case of centrifugal pumps, always the same. If you are driving it slow, the impeller has a gap to the housing, and due to the back pressure, you have a backflow between housing and impeller of the pump. So it's the cause for the loss on the left side. And flow losing, turbulences, flow separation are the cause for the losses at very high speeds. Maximum pump suction curve, of course. We discussed it at the beginning. Every pump has a maximum suction height. And depending on volume flow is less and less, because you have to reduce the pressure, but you have just the potential of 1 bar due to the ambient air pressure. And 1 bar pressure, you cannot realize it. You can realize maybe 0.8 or something like this. It will give you the maximum volume flow, and it goes back. The height goes back if you are increasing the volume flow. Okay. Is not important for you now. The same story. It's now the height and the volume flow, the different losses, friction loss, change direction. So if the curvature of the blade fits to the direction, if there's any collision loss or not, leakage loss, hydraulic loss, flow separation, secondary flow. So at the end, if you add all the different losses, you will end up with such a curve. So the loss is minimum at a certain point, and independently, if you are slower or faster, they will increase. Okay. It's the same again with figures. Okay, this one is important. Just imagine you are changing parameters in case of a pump. If you are changing the density of the medium, fuel, water, or something heavier than water. So if the density goes up, it will not affect the delivery height in case of a centrifugal pump. Of course, the delivery height will give us more load, because the higher density liquid, in order to pump it to the same level or a higher level, we need more pressure. But the more pressure will come from the higher centrifugal force of the higher density liquid in the same pump. Okay, this is a surprise. So we higher density, and we will get the same delivery height. So we'll get a higher pressure with the more dense liquid. But it will not increase the flow rate. And it will not change the efficiency. But it will significantly affect the consumed power. So if you double the density of the medium and you are delivering the same amount, you have to double the driving power, because you are moving more mass flow. The effect of viscosity and characteristics curves: higher viscosity, higher friction loss, worse hydraulic efficiency, lower delivery height, but it decreases the volumetric, the leakage losses at low speed. So you see, to find the right type of a pump, typically in our world, you will not, unless you are going to Danfoss or such a company. So typically the user if you are an engine developer, you are not designing the pump, the blades, and every component. You have a task: flow rate, pressure rate, the viscosity, and all these stories, temperature. And you are going to the pump companies, and you have to discuss with them in which field, what is the operational range of the pump you require, and so you will find it. But you have to understand these influences, what influences your choice. And now cavitation. At the lowest static pressure, the liquid might boil to form some bubbles. And as the liquid goes into higher pressure area, the bubbles will collapse. It's very interesting. Liquids are not compressible. Since that, as the bubble collapses, the liquid is coming from all directions to the mid of the bubble, and there will be a huge collision. And bang, a pressure peak. And these pressure peaks are so aggressive, they are eating metal. You can see the propeller of a boat, and there is a clear zone you can see where the bubbles collapse. in the spot they are generated, no problem. You have the issue always in the spots where the pressure is increasing again, and they collapse. And it's not only a pure mechanical story. There are some heat effects as well. So for example, if you look at the British ship industry, developed at first the best bronze alloy for ship propellers. Because just imagine, cavitation will occur even in the polar sea, at zero C. Because if the speed, the tangential speed of the propeller is high enough, it will boil at zero C, if the pressure is low enough. And in shipyards, you always see that used vessels, that the propellers will be repaired by welding, by replacing the material which disappeared due to cavitation. So it's the system, the formation of bubble and the collapse of the bubble. Here you can see it's a cast iron impeller of a vehicle water pump. Cast iron is eaten by cavitation. Or here you can industrial pumps. The wall is through. And the funniest situation of cavitation we experienced, we designed an engine for Ford Motor Company for US. It was a very successful engine. In first stage, it was an old 4.0, we renewed completely, I mentioned it already. It was early an all cast iron pushrod, typical American type 4.0 engine. I guess with some 160 horse, so 4.2 cubic capacity, 160 horse. And they require the ULEV engine, ultra low emission vehicle, with the same cubic capacity, but with overhead cams, aluminum cylinder heads, and so on. And it had, I guess, in first attempt, 200, 220 horse, something like this. A few years later, they made a power upgrade, and suddenly they had leaky cylinder heads. And we did not want to believe it. There was a cavitation which occurred in the cylinder head. No moving components, but even the cylinder head, you might have some narrow ports, high flow speed. It decreases the static pressure. And due to the combustion, and it was the key, due to the combustion, the top of the combustion chamber will flex a little bit. It moves. Because you have 100 bar pressure on the low side, it's aluminium, it will be little motion. And this motion kicked a certain spot in the cylinder head into cavitation. And the cavitation created a funnel, or a micro tunnel through the material through the thickest cross section of the cylinder head into the combustion chamber. So it flooded the combustion chamber after a few months of operation. It went through the aluminium. Shit happens. It's really crazy. Jet pump, okay? Jet pump is for ladies to spray some perfume or whatever, or to paint cars. It's a jet pump. To paint cars, you have a painting gun. It will accelerate air in a narrow section, and the paint will come from a bottle only due to the pressure difference generated by the fast flow, and will be atomized and sprayed onto the surface. It is the working principle. So the low pressure of the narrowest cross section will be used to add the paint or liquid or whatever to the airflow. And one crazy pump, the mammoth pump. You might have situations where the medium is containing mud or some stone grains or abrasive materials. You cannot use any pump. If you use a volumetric pump, positive displacement, it will kill the ceilings and everything. If you are using a centrifugal pump, it will ruin the blades due to abrasive friction. So the trick, you are putting compressed air into this tube. It formates a foam. And if the density is the foam low enough compared to that height of pure liquid, it will push it up. So the efficiency of the system is a disaster. It is a real disaster. Just an example, you have a shipwreck in the sand, in for 50 meters depth in the sea, and it's full with sand. And to pump out the sand, you can use this type of Mammoth pump. It will deliver this foamy water with some sand particulates out, and peu à peu, so you will require time, you can pump out the sand from the shipwreck. Efficiency is almost zero. It's a disaster. Okay, ramjet pump. So you have this device. Firefighters use, for example, aircrafts, amphibian aircrafts. And they are not landing on the sea, they are just flying very fast on the surface. And with this ram jet, they can pick up the water due to the speed and fill the tank of the aircraft. And they can drop it on above the fire then. It's very, very usual. And now the questions. What is the maximum depth from which water could be sucked from? Practically 7 meters, theoretically 9, 10, but only little volume flow because you have no pressure difference to accelerate it. And it's very risky, and you understand now cavitation. So this is the typical situation, it will cavitate. You cannot avoid it. Even in cars, just imagine, you have water on 100, 110 C, okay, with some antifreeze, it will increase slightly the boiling temperature. But you have a water pump rotating 6,000 RPM. It's not a trivial situation to survive. So we need very careful design for water pumps in cars in order to avoid cavitation. So you are very near to 100 C, near to boiling temperature, and a little pressure drop due to the Bernoulli equation, you will have cavitation. So how can we get water from deeper? Yes, we have to move the pump in a height. The suction height will not exceed the allowed one. List a few different types of positive displacement pumps. Rotary, yes, rotary pumps. Piston pumps. Okay, it's the piston pump. Yes, and the old fuel pump had a diaphragm. It's very typical. And the peristaltic pumps. Okay, if you are pressing out the tooth past, it's a peristaltic pump, one-way function. Okay, why peristaltic pumps are used for medical purposes?
Separated from the actual components.
You can absolutely separate the medium from ambient influences, and vice versa. You can protect the ambient against poisons or whatever. What defines the pressure ratio of a centrifugal pump? Okay, it was the famous Euler equation with these vectors.
It's radial or axial.
Doesn't matter at the end.
Surface.
It was the projection of a vector.
Flow rate.
It was the projection of the absolute speed at the exit point. Projected onto the tangential line. If it's getting longer, you have more pressure ratio. If it's getting shorter, you have less pressure ratio. So maybe I go back. It's very, very important, and it's a more or less standard question, which curve belongs to which pump. So we are mixing them, and you have to find, okay, it's backward curved, it's radial, it's forward curved. So you can see if this, the projection of the red absolute speed vector onto the tangential line is longer, this situation, you have higher pressure. If it's shorter, you have low delivery pressure. In this case, we are increasing flow rate. W2 is longer than W1. We are creating now the C2, and the projection of C2 is clearly longer than the projection of C1, so it's going up. Okay. So the pressure ratio is depending on the gain of the projection of the absolute speed onto the tangential line. It's just, no, so I will always ask the question in a way, which one is which one? Okay. Okay. What are the advantages and disadvantages of forward curved and backward curved impellers? We are using all three types, as a matter of fact.
Backward curved impellers, the pressure ratio increases, the mass flow rate decreases.
And why is it good for us?
Because if the system gets Lang scale, then we might...
Or other deposits or whatever. Even if it's a radiator for cooling water, and it's a dirty environment, and you have a fan to push the air through the radiator, even if you have dust on the blades and the cross section is reduced, it's similar. It's better to have a stable working point, and the pump should react in case of increasing back pressure with increasing delivery pressure. Okay? Yes. Yes, it is the benefit. What is the disadvantage of the backward curve? At high flow rates, no delivery height, no pressure. It drops to zero. The forward curve?
It's very sensitive.
Is the disadvantage? It's sensitive against increasing resistance of the system, but? Incredible flow rates with a small unit. So compared to the size of the device, it can deliver incredible amounts of air, for example, in ventilation systems. But we have to take care, and the maintenance and the filter must be cleaned, otherwise it will not work. Okay. So list the losses of centrifugal pumps. Could be a multiple choice question.
Pressure loss.
Of course. Good, the easiest one. First point. Other name. If a fluid is moving, you will have always. Maybe you have flow losses, just the fluid friction. In critical situations, you might have flow separation. It's a real disaster. And you will always have some, it was called secondary flow, leakage or backflow, because you need a gap between impeller and housing. Since that is a general message, in case of fluid machinery, the larger the size, the better the efficiency. It's very typical. So a turbocharger for a locomotive is always more efficient than a turbocharger for a passenger car. It's very, very clear. And vessel engines, they have sometimes already axial turbines, because the exhaust gas flow rate is so high that it's better to go with an axial turbine. Okay. How does viscosity and specific weight affect pump behavior? So let's start with density. We have the same pump, same speed, and more density. What will change and what will not change? The power will change. Exactly proportional to the density, yes? And one of the most surprising, the delivery height will not change. So we will experience more pressure, but it is required to achieve the same height with a more dense fluid. Okay, very good. And viscosity? The flow loss, let's say flow losses, will be increased with higher viscosity. Which loss can be decreased with higher viscosity? It's not the right wording. Just remember, in a centrifugal pump, we have always a little gap between impeller and housing. And there you have a secondary or backflow. If the viscosity is higher, the backflow is less leakage. Even the gear pump, the higher the viscosity, the smaller the backflow. So the leakage is very, very typical. Okay. What can cause cavitation?
Small
cross-section due to the high flow speed, pressure drop, and the third, let's say, cavitation is always local boiling. That's the phenomenon itself. It's the principle, the working principle. So, well, we had it already. So pressure drop due to speed, for example, pressure drop due to static pressure. But I mentioned one at the end in our cars. Why is it generally risky? Because the temperature is anyhow very near to the boiling temperature. So you need only a little kick. At 100 C, it's nearly boiling. Little pressure drop is already cavitation. At 0 C, in the polar sea for a ship, it's far more safety, but they are going, of course, to the limit. And even warships were always borderline with cavitation. Okay. Pressure drop, flow speed, temperature. These are the risk factors. Explain the process, what happens.
Air bubbles form.
Why? It's not air bubble, there is no air. It's the bubble is, but which material? What is the gaseous form of water?
Vapor
or steam. Steam or vapor bubbles in any liquid, yes? They are moving into a higher pressure area and collapsing again. And there is a crash. This crash of water or liquid coming from opposite directions in the middle is a big crash, causing a mechanical damage and some temperature effect. So this is the example I mentioned. So the best ship propeller or vessel propeller is not the best steel. It's a special bronze alloy with better heat conductivity. And very wear resistant. It's a crazy process. Okay, explain the operation principle of jet pumps. Okay, the painting gun is one typical. In older cars or in the lawnmower, you have a jet pump. It is the
narrow
cross section. Inviting some liquid, what could it be? lawnmower, chainsaw, simple bikes with no fuel injection. The carburetor. The carburetor has a Venturi device. It's a jet pump. And due to the dropping air pressure, it sucks the fuel from the float chamber, atomizes it, and so on. So the carburetor is a jet type pump, nothing else. Okay. How does a Mammoth pump work?
We have compressed air.
Yes.
Below a tube that is in the water, and as the compressed air creates a foam, and if that foam is dense, but
okay. Yes. Yeah. It starts in the good direction.
If it's, I think, less dense than the actual medium, then the medium will rise.
So below a certain density, the static pressure of the liquid outside might be enough to overcome the height difference, and it will deliver the whole story. Yes. It's very interesting. Maybe it's just a story. The oil industry is working with water and mineral mixtures. It's very, very interesting. Earlier, they have rotary tables and turned the steel tube, and there was a furrow. There was a drill at the tip, and they drilled the stone and wanted to go to the oil. Today, it's a totally different principle. They are pumping water with some added minerals into the tube. The tube is not turning anymore. There is a turbine, and when this liquid will rotate the turbine and move the drill, and spills out the whole stone and everything to the surface. And it's very important, if you are reaching almost the oil field, the top level is always natural gas, and typically with a very high pressure. And you have to adjust the density of this mineral water mixture in a way that it can withstand the pressure of the gas field. If not, there will be a big issue, because it pushes out the whole liquid, and you cannot control it. Typically, it will ignite, and you have a flame. It was seen in the war in Kuwait, for example, where the Iraqis ignited all the oil wells. It's very, very difficult to extinguish them, to fight the fire, because it's a continuous supply of gas and oil from the earth. And it has some Hungarian relation. My former professor at the Budapest University had the idea earlier, far before the Kuwait war, for a Hungarian case, to put a fighter jet turbine onto an old Russian tank, and to go near to this fire, to this burning oil well, and to extinguish the fire with the exhaust gas of the turbine. And it works. It's just blowing out the flame. It's a big flame and big blow. So it's a very, very funny. I guess they had at the end two turbines, two fighter jet engines on the top of the tank. They went to the fires and could blow them out. Okay. So this was a short one. So I tried to reduce it to a minimum, but it's very important. In any case, if you are working as an engineer, you should have an idea, what are we talking about? There are so many different pumps in a car, and it's even in e-cars, to cooling the battery, for lubrication of the gearbox, of the e-motor itself, and so on. Anyhow, the ventilation of the car, heating, cooling, air conditioning. So we have always pumps everywhere.